All right, thanks, Matt. It's also a pleasure for me to be invited to be on this program and represent the Southeast. This is a little bit different talk than I'm used to giving. Although I'm 100% extension, I lost my research counterpart 5 years ago to retirement and they didn't replace him. So usually doing research and also doing the extension part. So usually showing data, and I don't think I have any data in this presentation. I recognize some people, but for those that don't recognize, I probably should tell you a little about myself. I was raised in the South, South Jersey, and trained at Penn State and Michigan State, so I got my share of corn and beans. But I took a job with the University of Georgia in Tifton, Georgia, which is South Georgia. There is a difference. And learned about cotton and peanuts. That is the major cropping system down there, and a lot of my talk for not, as far as nitrogen is going to be aimed more probably towards cotton than corn even, maybe a little forages. So that's where I'm coming from. A couple of disclaimers, too. I'm representing the Southeast, but you know, I'm definitely going to draw on my experience from South Georgia, which might be a little different than Alabama, and I saw David Wright earlier. Florida, the Carolinas. Also, I think I was invited to this talk because some of the research I've been doing lately is on the nitrogen efficiency, fertilizers, things like Agritain and ESN. I do not have as much direct experience with precision ag, but I want to address that in this talk. So that's definitely open for argument, but I'm going to give you my opinion. So you might also be sitting there saying, why is he showing a cotton picker on his title slide for a nitrogen talk? And when I started putting this talk together about new technologies, I started thinking about all new technologies. And if you're not familiar with cotton pickers, I took this picture 2 weeks ago at the Sun Belt Expo in Moultrie, Georgia, the largest farm show in North America. And the last 3 years, John Deere has been showcasing. This is really pretty radical technology in the cotton picking world. If you don't know, usually cotton is blown up into a basket, and then the farmer dumps it into either a bull buggy or it goes into a module. It has to be packed. You've got a tractor hooked up to hydraulics. It's packed. When it's full, they have to move it, and they have to put a tarp over it, and they move on. Basically, what John Deere has done here is basically put a large round baler on a cotton picker. And this really increases efficiency, if you will, because not only does it get wrapped and you don't have to have all that equipment, but they can even carry that one bale as they're picking the next, and they have options on where to drop that bale at the end of the field. They don't have to drop them in the middles, et cetera. So it's pretty radical technology. So I was thinking about technologies and what has been adapted or not, and I think I'll wait till my last slide to tell you whether I think this is going to be adapted or not. So I was thinking about all these technologies, first of all, I'm thinking, you know, some of the barriers and opportunities. And I also realize a lot of those are the same things, you know, the opportunities and challenges. And I started about thinking about all the technologies. I'm thinking, well, maybe we've got too many technologies. Maybe that's one of the reasons we're slow to adopt some of the nitrogen technologies. Again, when you think of cotton, you know, the first technology you think of is seed technology. We're growing very little conventional varieties. Almost all of ours are transgenic. A bag of cotton seed costs $500 approximately, and that plant's about 6, maybe 7 acres if you stretch your seeding rate. Of course, we got treatment on the seed itself, fungicides, insecticides. Pesticides also, you know, you look at all the technology with different modes of action, so lowering our active ingredients, et cetera. And then you got precision ag, and not just sensor technology and grid sampling, variable rate, but things like guidance. Guidance has been quickly adopted in South Georgia for planting, especially with peanuts, for digging. It really increases the digging efficiency of peanuts. So there's a technology that was rapidly adopted. And then this is on purpose, fertilizers at the end, right? And we get the fertilizers, and we got some technologies. And I really think that's part of our problem with the slow adoption of some of these. You know, it's just low person on the totem pole kind of thing, and it's what's thought as last. I thought maybe I was off on that, but I was in a talking to A4 division on Monday morning, and I can't remember if it was wheat in Kansas or corn in Iowa. Doesn't really matter. They did a survey of the challenges to the farmer, and where do you think nitrogen was? It was on the bottom. I think the first one they said is weather, which you can't do anything much about the weather anyway. But varieties was their second one, and nitrogen was low. You know, it's just low on the importance sometimes in technology. And I don't know why. You know, we like Cliff said, we try to do the education as best we can. And, you know, I do some forage meetings. This is our economist, Kurt Lacey, put this together. When fertilizer prices peaked in 2008, you go to a forage meeting, you say, you know, 70% of your costs are in fertilizer. I mean, they kind of already knew that, but I think it gets their attention. And, you know, you think they'd be really interested in adopting some efficient, nitrogen efficient especially, because most of that cost there is nitrogen. And I don't want to belabor this point, but I just thought I'd tell you a little story again as far as we need to increase you know, and emphasize the importance of soil fertility. This is a field. These are dead peanuts. Actually, dead peanuts and some sick peanuts and dying peanuts. This is in a farmer's field in Tift County, Georgia, my home county, where our specialists like myself were also raised. And the farmer saw this in the field, and who do you think he calls first? He calls the weed scientist. It's not me. Calls a weed scientist, comes out there and says, you know, I think I got a herbicide carryover. He's actually following collard greens, you know. And so my friend and colleague goes over all the herbicides he did and says, no, I don't think it's herbicide. He comes back. Who do you think he calls next? So he calls the plant pathologist. He says, it looks like a seedling disease. So the plant, another friend of mine and colleague goes out there, takes the samples, looks at them, no seedling disease. Who do you think he calls last? Right. Actually, didn't even call me. one of those other colleagues said, "Hey, there's a field you might want to go look at." So I go out there. I go out there and I see this. This is the rest of the field. Notice anything interesting? You know, you say. So you get out there. You do your classic troubleshooting. Say, "What? You know, what'd you do different on the right hand side?" Well, I had collard greens on all of it. Well, what'd you do different? You had to do something different on that side. He thought about it. I say, "Oh yeah, we cut those on the right first. And those ones to the left, we kept on pushing them, so we kept on pouring the nitrogen to them." So you take the soil samples, and what do you think you get? You get a 5.7 on the right, which is kind of marginal even for good peanut production, and you get a 4.9. That's below 5.5, aluminum toxicity and everything else, and that's a dead peanut. So he was mad. He wouldn't even look at me. He walked away. It happens all the time. But, you know, I just feel like the Rodney Dangerfield of the extension specialist, you know, when it comes to, and again, I think this is an important issue of why some of these nitrogen technologies are slow to be adopted. So, thanks for putting up with that little story. Another factor, I'm going to call it the knowledge gap and decision gap, and I can't take credit for that. What I did is I called my local precision ag expert researcher, and I said, George, I said, what do you think is the number one barrier for farmers around here adopting nitrogen technology? And I was really thinking sensor technology and putting nitrogen on cotton. And I didn't want to influence them all. I said, I want to know what's your gut feeling off the top of your head? And he said this decision gap or knowledge gap. And I think what he meant is that, you know, we got a pretty good handle on sensors and how to use them. But, you know, that gap to where, what do we really tell the farmer? Exactly how much nitrogen he needs? You talked about, you know, policy getting ahead of science. To me, this is recommendations get ahead of research. You know, we're not there. And we might be a lot closer in other parts of the world, like on corn in the Midwest or whatever. But I can tell you, we're not quite there yet with nitrogen recommendation on cotton. And cotton's a real different crop. You know, you got growth regulator issues and greenness of the leaf. It's not like like corn, you know. But that's a gap, and I think that's an issue. And hopefully we're closing that gap on things. For example, I've been working with urease nitrification inhibitors like Agritane, and I've been working with ESN, and I think we've been able to close the gap on cotton in the southeast on things like Agritane. Not only myself, but others. You know, we found out that there's definitely something like Agritane works in certain situations. I don't think we'd expect, you know, these things just to be adopted on every acre, you know, that kind of thing. But you know, we do know there's spots where they work. ESN, we're getting close. I think we're getting closer and figuring out how that fits in and works. And you got to work it into your system. So I think we're closing the knowledge gap on some of these things. But, you know, another thing I got to think about, you talk about volatilization. You know, again, you look at some of those other technologies that are being adopted, and there are things they can really see and get their hands on. You know, I always said, you know, when you got a weed, you know, you got to kill it. You got a bug, you got to kill it. Even if you have to take two bricks and smash it. You know, how do you tell a farmer he's getting a lot of nitrogen volatilization? You know, we did chamber studies and measured it. And, you know, even then, you know, when you got it, you go out there and you go, you know, I think you're about 10 pounds short on nitrogen. You know, whatever. They're thinking about something else. So that's another issue, I think, that makes it hard to adapt these things is really, again, showing the importance and showing them that kind of thing. Now, when it comes to environmental stewardship in the Southeast, you know, I don't know, maybe you don't get that. I don't know. What's he look like he's doing? Yeah, he's a tree hugger. Okay, good. I'm glad. You guys, wait, is this on? Okay. I'm not saying that farmers in the Southeast are not concerned about the environment, and I'm not saying they're doing bad things to the environment. Actually, I think they're doing a pretty good job. But on the grand scheme of things and the scale of what's on their radar to do, it's not real high up there, I can tell you. You know, you can go talk to Bubba Johnson in Camilla, Georgia. That's a real guy, by the way. I didn't make that up. And, you know, you tell him he's going to save the environment, you know, and he just doesn't get that warm, fuzzy feeling that some other people would get. I don't really think there's much warm and fuzzy about Bubba Johnson at all. So, you know, that's where we are, and that's just the fact of it. In fact, it made me think about some other things that we have been trying to push environmentally and all, and I thought I'd thought about conservation tillage. I've done a lot. When I first got to Georgia in 94, I did a lot with conservation tillage. You know, a lot of people say, we're flat in South Georgia. We don't get a lot of erosion, which is not true. We don't have a lot of organic matter. Our typical organic matter is like 0.5%. And, you know, we go and cover crops and no-till. Good idea. We actually got up to about 40% adoption. Thought we were doing pretty good. What happened recently? Resistant pigweed. One of the techniques to take care of that is deep turnip. Heck, my colleague in weed science did such a good job. He told him about deep turning. Some guy went out and deep turned 1,000 acres. He didn't even have a pigweed yet. So I thought that was pretty interesting. But, you know, if we and why did they go to it? They didn't go to it because environmental stewardship, really, I don't think. They went to it because it saved time and money. And, you know, they're getting back away from it because they got it. They don't think they can produce cotton without it. But, you know, the problem with this, these turn into this. This was on another slide, and if you didn't know, this is in Georgia. We call it the Little Grand Canyon. It's a little above Columbus, Georgia, along the Alabama line. And that is basically a 100-foot deep erosion gully is what it is. I teach a soils and hydrology class in Tifton, Georgia. We have a teaching program there now. We've had for 8 years. And probably the highlight of the class is we take a field trip to the Little Grand Canyon. Great place to show soil profiles, and you don't get much chance to see a 100-foot profile, you know, and talk about erosion. I had a student tell me, you know, he's from a farm. He said, you know, when I see this, I think of erosion whole differently after seeing that. So anyway, you know, I think environmental stewardship, we still obviously need to emphasize it, but it's going to be a little tougher sell in a place like South Georgia. I didn't want to be the only one not showing this slide, I guess. Where's Rob? Rob, I hope you have it. All right, good. I really believe in this. I think this is a great, you know, way I've used this. You know, the four R's. I had to ask somebody asked me one time, you got an S, an R, and a T, and a P. How do you get four R's? South Georgia again. All right, anyway, you know, and I think we've promoted this kind of back to the basics, which it is. And I wrote an article one time, you know, I said, you know, back to the basics or new technology, you know, with these enhanced efficiency fertilizers, you know, which is it? And I think on your slide or somebody's slide already, it showed, you know, they're not mutually exclusive. I think, you know, you can inject this new technology on any of those four R's. Source, for example, somebody mentioned, you know, the polymer coateds and the urease inhibitors. Rates, you know, et cetera. So I think it's a good teaching tool to say we can put these technologies in with these basics. There is efficiency listed up there on the left-hand corner. So I think that's the way to go. But it was hard going through this whole talk, that, you know, and kind of had some clues and everything, you know, what would really cause an adoption of a new nitrogen technology? I don't think there's any doubt. The bottom line is the bottom line. You know, if you go to a farmer and say, you know, hey, you can use a little less nitrogen, you won't get as much volatilization, you'll save the environment, you know, that's fine. But if you tell them I can save you $10-$20 an acre, you really get his attention. So I think as long as we can show that, you know, we'll get these things adopted. And I think I got time for another story before I conclude. I had a county agent in southwest corner of the state call me and said he had a fertilizer dealer nearby wanted to work with a corn grower and try the ESN. And he's going to put it on half a pivot, and he's going to put regular fertilizer, I think he was using UAN, on the other half. And I said, that's good. You know, track how much you use and what you do. He's going to use split applications. He actually went out there and took tissue samples like every other week, emailed them to me. We were looking at them. And we got to the end, and I said, you know, you really got to total up exactly how much you use and how much it costs, et cetera. And he ended up using more ESN, actually, I think pounds of N, than the other. So I said, all right, so he's not going to use ESN next year, right? He said, oh, no, he loved it. He said it saved him a couple applications. And again, applications, time is money again, and saving applications, that's real. You know, if you look at a 200-acre cornfield, you know, some of our pivots are getting up that size. You know, application costs, what do economists say, $5 an acre? You know, those things can pay for itself. So I think the farmers are definitely in tune and looking at these new technologies. And again, if they can save them money, and in some cases, time is money. I had an extension colleague one time tell me, he says, I think we, as extension people, we really underestimate the convenience factor to farmers. You know, we look at that research and look at this, but, you know, in the real world, you know, saving them time is saving them money, and they really look for convenience. So I'll conclude, and I might even have time for questions, unlike my first talk I gave this meeting. How do we capitalize? I don't know if capitalize is the right word. How do we help get these things adopted, et cetera? You know, I think we got to, again, show the importance, and we have a challenge there, I think, because, you know, we got to jump up and down and get ahead of the weed scientists and others. Narrow the knowledge gap. The more research we can do to show these things work, and also put the economics, obviously, to them. Emphasize the stewardship, and I put a gap and put it last, you know, show me the money. So I think that's where we are. Something to think, hopefully gave you something to think about. You want to know what I think about if they're going to adopt the John Deere picker? By the way, it costs, a list price is $650,000. It is designed to load up and go all day. You don't even have to get out. I don't think there's a port-a-john in it, so I haven't figured that one out. But fill it up with fuel and water, and it's those wraps. Those wraps, by the way, cost about $35 a piece. It actually is being adopted already. They told me how many they sold, and a big percentage was they sold them in Georgia and our bigger farmers. Obviously, you got to be a pretty big farmer. But I have seen quite a few of these this fall around, and it is being adopted. So that's probably not the answer you thought, was it? Anyway, thank you for your time. Hopefully you enjoyed it, and I guess we have time for questions.
Questions for Glenn. I had one. When you mentioned the demonstration with the farmer and comparing side by side under a center pivot, and I know you know where I'm coming from here. Yeah. I've worked in extension myself years before.
I do.
There are risks of their not replicating, and I was wondering, how are we going to overcome the barrier with people that have yield monitors and have this technology, can see yield differences on their own farm? They don't need the research scientist or extension to see those differences. How do we nudge them into properly replicating so they don't make errors in concluding about comparisons?
Yeah, they could probably hear the question on the microphone, but I'll repeat. You know, it's basically how to, you know, it's non-replicated trials, how you deal with that. And well, I was trying to avoid that because that gets me excited, and you gave a long talk. Bill Cox gave a talk earlier, said on-farm has got lower CVs and better data than small plot. I had the opposite experience. I get better data on small plot. You go out on farm, and then it's not replicated. You know, it gets a little tricky. You know, I'm not going to say that there's no value to that. I think there is. I mean, there's great value. But you got to be really careful. We got a lot of variability in our soils in South Georgia. We can go across three. I always tell them, if you want to do that, let me pick which side of the pivot. If you know, I can help you, you know, tell you which way it's going to come out. And then you get crazy things like they say, well, yeah, we grew peanuts over on that side. On this side, we had cotton. You know, you can't do that. So that's a challenge. Going from, you know, small plot replicate, you know, replicated small plots to replicated big plots to not replicated. I don't know. You just got to work with them and really try to figure out what you can get out of it and go from there. I don't know, it's a hard question. Glad you brought it up. I thought about that. Any other questions? All right, thank you.